If you'd like to turn with me to Romans chapter 9, we've been following on from what we were talking about the last time with the unseen body. We're going to read a few verses, Romans chapter 9, verses 9 through to 21. Okay, Romans 12, 9 through to 29, verse 9.
Romans
12, but verse 9. Am I all confident? Have I said something different? I don't know. Did I? Oh, well. You should know what I mean. Never mind. Romans chapter 12, starting at verse 9. Alright? I'll not read something different, don't worry. It says, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor, serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. This really follows on from the start, obviously, of Romans 12, where it's talking about worship and our attitude and how we should be in worship, and it's a practical application of worship. Worship isn't just singing. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You go with that, yes?
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle. It's our life given over to God. And what Paul's doing here is giving people who's writing to a time in Rome the outworkings of worship. We looked last time about the idea of hating what is evil and clinging to what is good. Following on from that in verse 10, it says, be devoted in love. Now, it's talking specifically about the church, the family of God. It's giving us instructions, directions, and how we should relate to one another, how we should relate to the Christians. Be devoted in love. The Greek word that's used there is philostorgos. It's a combination of two words, okay? Philos, love. Storge, which is a kind of affection. The word storge there is the word that's used with regards to the love of families. So when you're talking about fathers to sons, to daughters to wives, brothers to sisters, it's the family love that we're talking about here, alright? The natural affection that arises because you're in a family. You know, how many parents have said, I wonder if I'll love this baby when it arrives. But the moment of birth, that's when it all changes. There's a natural affection. There's something that just springs up from within. This word here is storge. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about that kind of love, that kind of affection, that kind of relationship that is instantly brought into being. And the start of it, philos, is again a kind of love, and it's emphasized in saying to say that and a bit more. You know, if you go out and get the iPhone, you can get the iPhone Plus. It's the previous version, but it's better. Well, this is what this word's doing. It's sort of saying, yeah, it's that natural family affection, that natural family feeling, that thing that suddenly is conjured up in your heart, the plus side. Be devoted to one another. It's a mutual regard, a reciprocal tender love. It's a cherishing. This is valuable. This is important. It says be devoted to love. You think of being devoted to something. Something has got you. Now you give over to it. Talk about being devoted to God. Someone who's devoted to God is given over. The idea of the monks and the nuns in times past was that they were giving over their whole lives to God. They were not going to be distracted by something else. This was going to be the be-all and end-all. Paul says, be devoted. In Romans 1:28-32, Paul again is writing, he's talking about times that have been prophesied. This is what he says. Furthermore, just as they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, so God gave them over to a depraved mind so that they do what ought not to be done. They become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, and depravity. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, and malice. They gossip, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful, the inventive ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents, they have no understanding, no fidelity, no family, love. This is the way to translate. We see a breakdown of families. We see that breakup, that sort of wrenching apart of family relationships. The older versions that are translated as without natural affection. It is natural to love your family. And what Paul is saying here in Romans 1 is they don't have that natural affection. It's broken down, it's gone, it's disrupted. Families at war are families at peace. I know someone who left his pet in the care of his mother while he went on holiday. That pet died while he was on holiday. He never spoke to his mother again. Can you believe that? I find it hard to believe, but it's true. That breakdown, that wrenching apart or something like that, yeah. Pets can be very valuable. You have great feeling, attachment on them. But less than the family. Families torn apart, families in disunity, families where the relationships are wrenched out of joint. Paul's saying, don't be like that. Do the opposite. Be devoted. A lack of mercy, a lack of faithfulness, not the way it's meant to be. Paul says, that's how we treat each other. We've been made brothers and sisters. We've been adopted into the same family. We are co-heirs. We have the same Heavenly Father. We might have travelled along different routes. We've got different experiences, different backgrounds, different interests. We've got different baggage. We've got different problems. But we're now in the same place. We are the family of God. And the natural connection to what we should have with each other. Paul says, be devoted to each other. It's an instinctive element. Something that draws members together. You have something unique, special, vibrant. Be devoted to one another. Verse 13 sort of follows it up. It says, share with the most people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Galatians 6:9-10 says, let's not become weary in doing good. At the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially those who belong and the believers, especially, chiefly, mostly. Do good to everybody. Yeah, that's what God wants. But remember, you know, be prepared to give what others need. Isn't it nice to come home and just relax? As they say, no airs, no graces, this is home. You know, even after I was married, I used to go home to my mum's and dad's. It didn't knock on the door. Because I had knocked after we'd been married. And my mum says, what are you doing? This is your home. I'm married, moved out, but as far as they're concerned, I'm still family. When I came home from work before I was married, I didn't come to the door, knock on it, wait. So why on earth are you going to do the same thing? You are part of this family. You are welcome. And that's how we are to be with one another. We're part of God's family. you can relax. You're at home. You don't have to put on a mask. But sometimes accepting what's different. Others are different. Yeah? I'm best. That's what we think. Everybody else is different to me. Acceptance is not condoning what's wrong. Acceptance is not saying that anything goes. Acceptance is not saying behaviors you like, it just doesn't matter. But it means taking people as they are. It means accepting them in their differentness. To seek their good. To take them at face value. We're not all the same. Sometimes with my people to act as if they were. You know, I've been told several times at work, just because you can do it, doesn't mean to say everybody else can. Just because we can do certain things, doesn't mean to say everybody else can. The assumption is that everybody's like us, but it's not necessarily true. In fact, I can tell you, it's definitely not true. You know, we can have the attitude that such and such happened to me, and that was alright. Such and such went off, I got over it. I was there, well, I picked myself up. This happened, nobody helped me. So we get over it. We are all different. Different journeys, different paths, different problems, backgrounds. It's the old story of walking in someone else's shoes, you know, the old story that before you call somebody his name, before you make a judgment about that person, walk a mile in their shoes. That at least when you talk to them, you're a mile away from how they get you. It's a joke, yes. We have to understand that people come from different places. We have to understand that people are different ways along the path. And accept them accordingly. You accept them as they are. I need to accept you as you are. Sometimes it can be imagination on our part because we haven't been there. We haven't gone through what they've gone through. We haven't experienced what they've had. We haven't been in their situation. Again, at work, I've had people come to me who don't know how something should be done, don't know how I'm going to do it, but still prepared to turn around to me and say, well, it must be easy. Yeah? Can you see the ridiculousness of this statement? I have no knowledge about what you've got to do. I haven't got a clue about how you're going to do it. In my full lack of knowledge, I can say, it must be easy. No. We accept people as they are, warts and all, because that's what patterns do. We are different. We take that as it is. We have to be devoted to one another. But even more than that, it says honor one another. Give somebody preference because of who they are. Honor them because they are part of the family. Not because of what they like, not because of what they know, but simply because they are part of our family. We value them. On the same equal footing as we wish to be valued. Paul goes on from there. It says in verse 11, we have a need for zeal. You don't get the word zeal very often these days, alright? Unless you're attaching it to zealots, and then it's a really bad word, yeah? And I think, oh no, there's a zealot for whatever cause. And there's a bad connotation. It can be rendered Be diligent. I could give you an explanation for diligent. Instead, I'm going to give you two stories. Steve, can you pop the PowerPoint on, please? First one. Now then, younger ones will not recognize this, older ones will. If you're really old, you might have used one, but hopefully you'll see it. What is it? End it. Yeah?
End with a nib.
The nib of a pen. I won't say hands up who's ever used one. Is this? Alright, the idea is that what you do is you have the ink pot, yeah? Have the pen, dip the nib into the ink pot, and you can write through. I don't know how many letters, 5 or 6 letters, and you will get some boring, and so on, right?
So you need some blotting paper.
Yeah, yeah, you need some blotting paper because you've messed it up, that's right. We were in Birmingham a little while back, and in the 1800s, pen nibs were made by hand. What they had to do is they had to get a piece of metal. You see how it's sort of shaped like that, you have to grind that into it, you have to make it split up the middle for the ink to run down, bend it into shape, and each pen nib cost, here we are again, old stuff, 1 guinea. What's a guinea?
£1, 1 shilling.
£1 or in new money, for Stacey and Steve specifically, £1.05. Alright? But to put things into context, the annual salary of those days is the annual salary, £16 per year. So if you were going to buy one pen nib and they wore out, just under a month's salary would buy you one. Consequently, not many people had them. Guy, sort of going into the history of things, people from Sheffield, he was in the cutlery industry, went down to Birmingham, used the ideas that he got there, and he revolutionised the making of nibs. Here we are, all stuff again. So that a gross of pen nibs, it's a gross of 144 pen nibs with the new techniques now cost a guinea. That's transformation. One for a guinea or 144 for a guinea. He was using techniques that he picked up in the cutlery industry, using presses, stamping them out, things like this. And he had factories where they made these. Now then, those days they had 10-hour shifts. Okay? Not 8 hours, 10 hours. They were expected, in their 10 hours, how many nibs do you think they had to use? A lot, yeah, give me a little bit. Any numbers? How many do you think they should use in 10 hours?
A gross.
A gross? Sorry? 1,000. Any advance on 1,000? Or do you think that's too much? In one 10-hour shift, a skilled worker was expected to produce 18,000 nibs. That's 1 every 2 seconds. They weren't allowed to talk, they weren't allowed to sing, they weren't allowed to distract people. Because you think for 10 hours, 2 seconds, that's fast. At the end of their shift, the nibs were checked for quality, the weight, and that they worked. Random ones would be taken out, people would patch right with them. And if there was a problem, then your batch was a problem. So then they had to sort out the batch and your money went down to 18,000. Can you imagine the concentration that took every 2 seconds? Bang. Bang. That's diligence. That is diligence. Be focused to be set. You are going to do this job, then you're going to do this job tomorrow. It's a 6-day week. People at that time thought that was good. Compared to some of the other stuff they had to do, that was good. All right, but that is a definition of diligence. I'll give you another definition that's the opposite of diligence. In the 1980s, chemist called Fraser Stoddart was working on new ideas of chemicals to make, if you like, the precursor to chemical machines. One of the things he was doing, he was making huge models. Can you pop the next slide up for us, please, Steve? Right, you might have seen this idea. You get a little ball with holes in, you get the rods and you stick things together, right? But he wanted to make, well, actually, no, he wanted us to make these models. They weren't just small models like that, but these models had hundreds and hundreds of these tiny balls, and the balls were about that big. Some balls had one hole in, some had two, some had four. He wanted to assemble models. You can put the next slide up, please, see. Right, there are that many there, you can't actually see the individual ones. It's a lot. Now, we were working 8-hour shifts. We had a break in the middle, we had a morning tea break, we had an afternoon tea break. Our task, this lasted for several weeks, because there were thousands of these things to make, drilling these tiny balls. Now, there was one particular ball that just had one hole in it. For that, we had to hold it into the machine, had to bring the drill up, you had to be very careful, line it up, make the hole the right depth. There was one guy who, after 10 minutes, was no longer diligent. And his idea was, instead of coming up nice and steady, making sure it was on center and in, he just flung the thing in like that. The drill shot up there or shot down there, sometimes it glanced up. And at the end of the day, we had to assemble these models. Well, they weren't nice like that, all were at all sorts of crazy angles. That is not diligence. You have the two. You have the nib maker, you have the model maker. And my only claim to fame in earthly terms is that some of these models now lie in the Nobel Museum in Oslo. And I contributed towards that. Alright? Wow. My balls were in the right place. But he spent a full day making these balls, right? And at the end of the day, he had to throw them all out. Because they're useless. Still got paid. Maybe he should have done. Alright? But they were useless. That is not diligence. Paul is saying, don't lose your diligence. If you like, in the examples that we've been using, Paul is saying, be a nib maker. Don't lose your focus. Don't let it slip. Don't let it slide. Each day is a gift. Be a nib maker. Each time you come together is an opportunity for God to be involved. Be a nib maker. Each person we meet is a chance to show Christ. Be a nib maker. Colossians 4:5-6, it says this: be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, make the most of every opportunity. Let the conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. The message version is slightly different. It says this: it says, use your heads as you live and work among outsiders. Don't miss the trick. Make the most of every opportunity. Be gracious in your speech. Your goal is to bring out the best in others in every conversation. Not to put them down, not to cut them out, but to build them up. Repetition will be very difficult. We know how things are going to go. And Roger was saying this morning about the idea of boring. Boring is not a situation, it's a state of mind. What's our state of mind with the people here? We've done this before, we're here again. Are we a nib maker or we are off and make it happen. Don't back off, don't ease up the pedal, don't take it steady, don't mark time. Be fired up, be looking, be the commitment maker. Be a commitment maker for God, all our family, both natural and spiritual, in high esteem. We need to value, we need to appreciate, we need to understand. We need to be wise. We need to treat each other as God treats us, fully accepted. Yes, things will change, but sometimes that takes time. It's a high, hard calling, it requires work. Sometimes that work can be repetitive, but we are again. Don't lose focus. The consistent work is what God is looking for. And we rise to the challenge, we be and we'll make it for God.